This week, we're wrapping up our three-part mini-series around the topic of being one church with many congregations. In this episode, our focus is specifically around the complexities of being a multi-site church, but from the perspective of two of our congregational leaders who've learned the lessons on the ground. I'm your host, Nick Charlie Key, and this is Big Rocks First. I get to introduce you to Paul Maughan and Bruce Martin, who lead two very different congregations under the Common Ground banner, but who still all pull in the same direction. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks. Great cool. to be with you, Nick.
No problem. I think let's kick off by introducing who each of you are and then give us some context for your specific congregations. Paul, you can start.
So the Inner City has been going for over 10 years. We've got a plant in Seapoint that's about 2 years old and another congregation in Greenpoint. And we are located in the beautiful city of Cape Town and doing our thing in the morning and in the evening.
So, we're out in the northern suburbs of Cape Town. Actually, quite a unique story in that we were a church that was planted 18 years ago. And 6 years ago, we actually merged into the Common Ground story, went from being an autonomous church to being a congregation within the story. And similar to Paul, we actually meet three times on a Sunday as well, two in the morning, one in the evening.
That's great. There's two things I want to touch on, one for each of you. But Bruce, I think it would be good, you mentioned it now already, coming from a standalone church into this context. Maybe talk us through what it felt like stepping into a multi-site setup like Common Grounds, having done church one way for so long.
Yeah, Nick. So as I think back on that, I think one of the things that was a great blessing was that we actually had a great relationship with Common Ground Church. There were a lot of shared values, a lot that we had in common already. And so I think mistakenly, I just assumed, hey, it would kind of be the same, just with some brothers around me. And actually coming into the story, there was a lot of new ways to think. I just realized how much over 12 years had become just automated in terms of what autonomy looks like and just being your own small church with three elders that are kind of collaborating on everything all the time. And so stepping in, I think we're surprised by how much actually needed to change in our mindsets and how we had to think in radically new ways in terms of being a congregation.
Okay, so talk us through some of those big changes. What are some of the key differences you found from going from like a standalone church and now going, okay, we're going to join a story, essentially becoming a multi-site church almost overnight?
Yeah, so I would say the biggest one for us was just as three elders, I think we'd just developed a really entrenched habit of just all being involved in everything. We would meet once a week and our mentality would be like, okay, what needs to be decided in the church as a whole? And we would all weigh in. And coming into Common Ground, I think something that was really beautiful to me was also challenging, and to the other guys on the team. Walked in and saw how people were specializing in certain things and responsibilities weren't just carried across the board, but actually certain people were doing things that they were really good at. And so that was beautiful. But when you've become used to just doing a little bit of everything and having no degree of actually even asking yourself, hey, what am I particularly good at? What should I be devoting more and less time to? It was quite a thing to come in and get used to that new way of thinking.
Yeah, that's great. And Paul, you have an entirely different background altogether. Talk us through your journey into leading a congregation and what that experience has been like for you. Obviously, you've been now part of two different congregations at Common Ground. Also, talk to us about how you originally became a congregational leader, now you've moved, and how your whole life has kind of changed around as well.
Great. So I lectured at UCT for many years, and that placed me quite well for the Ronald Bosch PM congregation, where a lot of the students from UCT make their way down the hill. And we had for some time served on the Rondebosch team, which involved both the morning and the evening crowds, very different crowds, sort of families in the morning, students in the evening. And it felt like there was a little bit of an unreality to say that you were an elder in the morning congregation. It just did feel like there were people that were your marriage mentors, and as a young person just felt like, man, I could be a better fit focusing on the students in the evening. And then likewise, others had experiences where they felt they were disconnected from the student world. So that was when we decided to separate Rondebosch AM and PM and actually say, let's build two different eldership teams. Let's see them as two different congregations. That meant we had to have some good conversations around how finances work, because students and teenagers aren't going to fund congregation as successfully as their parents in the morning. So we're still having conversations around that, how best the model works. But what we really did see liftoff on was a focused team that said, what does it look like, for instance, to work with a student term rather than a school calendar term? It sounds like such a simple thing, but we'd been running according to the school calendar, and that had really handicapped us because students would only arrive mid-February. So I've just touched on a few of the changes, but there was quite a lot more that said, let's focus on AM and PM separately. And I was able to do that for 6 years as someone who was lecturing at UCT with a team of base supporting, and then felt with three young children coming, it was time to really focus on the marketplace. And so I handed over leadership to a great leadership couple, and felt like Bosch PM was our season and that's where we were going to be. But God had other plans for us and called us to lead the inner city, but this time in a paid base capacity, so that we would be able to move over to that side of the world and lead Greenpoint and Seapoint. And so that's been quite a transition for the family, moving out of the suburbs, going to the city. But it also has been obviously a job transition. And then the third thing I'd say, which was caught us by surprise, although it's part of Common Ground, it's got Common Ground on the door and we've got the same website, it's a completely different set of people. And we hadn't quite realized what a big shift that would be, saying goodbye to 15, 16 years of history in this context, going across to inner city. But now that we're a year down the road, it has felt incredible to see the shared values and the shared direction and story. Although we weren't side by side for all those years, we've been able to catch up quite quickly because of our shared vision for the city.
Right. I think that's that really does lead well into another big question, especially for a city like Cape Town. And I think it's worth just saying up front, obviously, we are three white males in a very racially diverse and demographically diverse city. So we are doing our best to obviously try and tackle this question. We may not get it 100% right. But from your guys' perspectives, you were saying, you moved from a Bosch PM now to an inner city, the same name on the door, but the outworking of the church in these two different venues. I mean, we have now, 9 or 10 venues across the city, or congregations, should I say. It doesn't look the same at every single one of these congregations. For a city like Cape Town, we have a broad sway of the demographics, vast differences in race, nationality, income. Taking into also how our city has been built around, the legacy of apartheid and all of those sorts of things. Like, how do we go about being one church together across so many different expressions of what church could look like in the city? And I know that's a tough question to answer, but, it's something we need to be thinking about, and we are obviously doing our best already to try and tackle.
No, it's a great question. I think, where we vote is our time, right? So how do you allocate your time? And I think one of the tensions that we're always having to manage is that you're going to vote for a Monday to be a day where we're all together and we're learning from each other and we are connecting. And then you need to work hard with the rest of your week to make sure that you are taking your time to the edges of where your congregation is at. And one of the things which I've tried to do is meet people in their workplaces in the city context. That helps you understand someone quite quickly, to just go into their workplace and just see where they are, where they live out their life, whether their colleagues know they're Christian or not, whether they're happy to introduce you as a pastor or just as a friend. It's quite interesting to see that difference. But the fact is, you don't ask guys to come to you. You actively get out there to their place of employment and then see what the challenges are that they're facing. And we are positioned in the city quite close to a shelter, which again has sent people to us and that have been coming. And so again, we as a team went and spent time with that leadership team of the shelter to better understand it, spent time with the social worker. And so I think where the tension to be managed comes in is there's so much good stuff happening at the center, our better together dynamics, that you can go to a talk and you can get great resourcing at a coaching level, which is fantastic. But if you don't set aside the time to play the game almost and actually get onto the field at your congregation, you're going to just keep getting coached and never see muscle being exerted. So I think that's something I'm trying to get right in the multi-site stories. There's so much good stuff at the center, but it must never be the sole allocation of your time. You've got to get to the front lines. And I think when you're at the front lines, you'll notice, okay, wait, apartheid has caused serious damage here. We got to get on the front foot and do work here with the shelter and how can we strengthen them. It helps you see where work's required, where the kingdom's going, when you actually are voting your time to the frontier.
I think one of the things I'm really grateful for in the way we do things at Common Ground is our collaborative preaching strategy. And there are two ways that it helps me in terms of this thing of different congregations being different. The first is from time to time, I get to actually go into different congregations and preach in those contexts. And it's just really healthy to be regularly struck by how different we really are and how different things are. Precious in different places. Sometimes you can tell a joke or use an illustration and be really well received somewhere, and somewhere else you just are reminded, wow, this is a radically different group of people. And so that's been really helpful to me. The other thing that's been helpful is, as preachers, we're often anticipating a Sunday. We're talking mostly over email about what we're planning to preach, what illustrations we're using. And that's been really enlarging to me to really understand and just hear other preachers presenting things in a radically different way than I may be in terms of my local context. Nick, maybe if I can just also say on the second part of your question in terms of the diversity of our nation, I have to be honest and say I actually struggle to give an answer with any sort of authority, in that I feel really challenged, both our congregation in Durbanville, as well as even our story so far. It feels like we've operated in diversity, yet in quite a narrow band. And I'm really excited about how God's calling us out beyond into some new areas, some new congregations. I think we've got so much still to learn. And right now, I'm more looking forward to what I've still got to learn than what I've got to say.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks. That's a really tough question, and I think it's something we're still going to be answering as we go along, and we never, I don't think in foreseeable future, going to have a definitive answer on that necessarily, but it's good to know that we are kind of working through it and we're looking for the answers where we can find them. So back to the concept of the, you know, the multi-site, and I think obviously, as you touched on, we started the first Common Ground in Rondebosch. It was the big campus, you know, it has all the office space here. It's the biggest venue as far as I'm aware. You know, this can feel often like this is the mothership, you know, the Rondebosch venue is the mothership, and then the rest are these little scout ships that have gone out into all the congregations. But it's interesting even just to hear, you know, from your story in the city, how you've planted a church, and now that church has now planted another church into its, you know, they're not all coming from this one central source being sent out. You know, they're sending out churches into the suburbs and into whatever areas they are in. And I mean, same with Constantinburg. I mean, they planted South Peninsula just even further down south from where they were. Is that something that you think is a good strategy, or is it nice to be centralized as a hub and send out from a central source? What do you think the benefits are to being planting churches that then plant more churches?
Yeah, I think I would avoid a polarized answer that one is better than the other. I think what I've enjoyed is really using the power of centrality in the right ways and not becoming overly enamored with it. And so there's some things that are just brilliant about having a base. I'm out in Durbanville. I get to fight traffic on a Monday morning. And sometimes as I sit in the rain, I wonder about the sanity of it. But every time I'm on the base for a day and we're connecting and we're uniting our hearts under the mission again, and I'm deeply grateful for the central realities. But I really do love the reality of what you were just saying in terms of us not becoming overly dependent on that, and each congregation being encouraged to be entrepreneurial, to be considering what God's mission, what this mission of Common Ground means for their context and what the next steps are for them reaching out and impacting the community that they're in.
Yeah, and our big vision, Steph, is to fill the city with the life, message, and fame of Jesus. And the number one kind of way to get Christ followers is to plant churches. You know, we're convinced of that. And generally, because we're on the front lines, be able to spot, hey, there's a lovely congregational church in Seapoint, but they're not meeting in the evening. There's no church, as far as we know, that meets in the evening in Seapoint. If we want to reach people there, let's be the first. Let's pioneer something there. So it's amazing how, if you are just at the center, you miss those gaps. But if you are going to a Constantinburg or to a Greenpoint already, suddenly God puts those opportunities across your path. So it's a both and, that you're able to sort of see them when you're on the frontier, but you're resourced from the center, which means that you're strong at the frontier, you know?
Absolutely. And I think that the Seapoint plant out of Greenpoint, I think for me even, was such an amazing illustration of like finding those gaps where those gaps need to be filled. Because I mean, obviously not many people would know, but I mean, the Greenpoint and the Seapoint congregation are on the same road, you know, and you would think like, well, people can just drive further down the road, surely just go to the church. But I mean, if you look at the difference in the people that go to those two meetings, they may be like a kilometer apart, or I don't know, just over, But flip, they're two completely different sets of people. You know, it's kind of meeting those needs where they're at and sort of, yeah, like you were saying, being entrepreneurial with your space. I mean, do you have anything to add to that?
I mean, to further emphasize, I mean, Seapoint, there's hardly any parking. So I'm thinking, how's this going to work? There's no parking. Yeah. But then you meet the guys and they're all living in flats there, you know, this densified part of Cape Town. And they're all walking, you know, little life groups are finding each other walking. And so you stand there, no one's coming in cars, they're all walking. And it's just this amazing scene, which, again, coming from a Rondebosch big parking lot car guard world, it's kind of like, you could do church without cars, like, how does this work? Yeah. But it's, again, part of what it means to learn about your city is to see that things can be different. You don't have the cookie cutter mold in different areas.
And Nick, maybe another thought, you were mentioning just two churches on the same road, just down the street from each other. I think one thing I've learned is that we often make the mistake of rating our accessibility by our own measure. You know, we look at our most committed people and say, well, they drove 17 kilometers to be here. But as a church, God's really got hold of our hearts to go beyond and actually to set the bar quite low, make it really easy for people to come through our doors. And that's meant actually making less assumptions about how easy or difficult it is to not only get to a church, but actually what you would encounter once you're there.
Yeah, that's great. So talk me through, for you guys, obviously, you know, you're on the ground, you're having to deal with all of the sort of day-to-day stuff, or, you know, trying to lead these congregations. What are some of the challenges and the complexities that you've really found around, you know, being a single church under a bigger church banner? What are some of the struggles that maybe you found, or some of the frustrations that you've had to deal with?
I suppose we've got to issue the disclaimer. We're the third podcast in a series, so we don't get to say the really cool stuff of what it means. But please listen to those if you haven't already. I think what's been fresh in my mind has been that we're a 22-year-old story as we've recording this, but some of us are younger, and we're holding a vision together. But, you know, Lange is less than a month old. We somewhere between 2 years with Seapoint and 8 years within a city, and being in that story at different stages means that you are in many ways facing different challenges. You know, there's the toddlers trying to walk, they're the teenagers dealing with puberty, and then there's the old married couple that's kind of well on their way. And I'm finding the complexity as a congregational leader of saying, you know, I don't have a lot of players on the field where I'm at. I've got quite a big rent expenses, and that takes up quite a lot of our budget. So when it comes to people resources, I don't have a lot of them. It's me and another guy who look after Seapoint, and we got two operations people to help us. And what that means for me is that I'm experiencing a lot of coaching, like great advice coming from the center around how to do marriage ministry better, preaching better, common good, our outreach into social justice. And I'm getting this coaching feeding into me as the one person, collecting the emails and the voice notes and the messages. And I really do feel like a bottleneck as far as not being able to pass that on to players easily. And so it does feel like I'm in some weeks, I feel like a toddler that's getting marriage advice, going like, if I had players, man, this would be amazing, but I'm not. And so I'm feeling this anxiety of like a lot of resourcing going into me, some beautifully crafted emails, some great strategies, but then just not able to get to them in time. And that comes on top of a layer of wanting to preach well and wanting to be excellent in a city that values that. And so I am feeling that sense of the joy of the coaches, but man, would it be amazing to be married and have lots of players on the field. I know I'm mixing analogies, but that the coaching could get fully implemented without me being a bottleneck. So I'm having to work with that anxiety and that sense of like the achieving me wanting to be it all, but actually I need to recognize I'm a toddler and let's do toddler appropriate things for now. Would be probably the thing that I wrestle with the most.
I think for me, one of the challenges, there's actually this double whammy challenge. I think any church that puts up its hand and says, we feel called to go multi-congregational, is probably putting up its hand as well to say, we're going to have a lot of leaders that are out in the marketplace, are volunteer-based by nature of how the financial models work. And so the double whammy for me is that I get to spend some incredible quality and quantity time on base with other guys in a room. We get to have some brilliant conversations and actually devote many hours to thrashing stuff out. I'm talking mostly about the 9 or 10 congregation leaders. But that's actually not where our arena is. Our mission plays out in each of our congregations. And if I'm not careful, I don't do the hard yards of making sure that my team in Durbanville is really well envisioned. We've fought to get time to make sure that a whole lot of exciting stuff that started on base has actually unrolled in our hearts and become a real conviction for us as a team on the ground in Durbanville.
It's a fantastic comment, and I think often where you get challenged is what's your A team? You know, you sit on two teams. You sit on this congregational leaders team, and you sit on a local eldership team, and I'm convinced that local eldership team is the A team, that we're leading Greenpoint and Seapoint, and that, but the time allocation can be to the other team, but that team's there to resource the A team, and you need to kind of keep that clear in your mind. Otherwise, the gap becomes wider, and again, the players that you should have, your marketplace leaders, are not informed, and they feel that deficit, and so does the church.
I think one thing that's been interesting for me, I've really learned a lot about myself and some of the mistakes I've made in that. And I think if you were to look at our congregation leaders, some people tend towards being, say, loyalists and really into the corporate vision. Others may be a bit more contrarian, like, hey, but this is the way I want to flesh this out. And I think you really want to know yourself. I'm more of a loyalist. I love like the big picture thing and guys collaborating together. And so at times I've overplayed the centralized story and actually underplayed my unique contribution or our unique context in Durbanville. And on the opposite side, some people who may be a bit more like, hey, we're doing our own thing out here. There's a real need. We've needed to find each other and really tension each other in our personalities to make sure that the central thing, the big picture is well in place, but that congregations are vitalized.
Yeah, that's great. And I think that it must be so difficult being, you know, if you've got 10 congregations, you've got 10 congregational leaders, you know, and each of them are strong personalities, strong characters. You put 10 of them in a room together. How do you ever get anything done? Like, because everybody wants to, I think obviously there's that element of grace and everything, but I mean, practically, you've got 10 different characters, all maybe wanting 10 different things, or some, like you said, some are loyalists, some are contrarians. You've got different people wanting different things. How do you manage the tension of doing this whole thing together with other people who are as strong as yourself?
I think what's happening at a very practical level is the sub-team that sort of would hear from everyone, so at least everyone's voice is included, but then gets trusted to go away and finalize things because, it's not going to work otherwise. And the sub-team is a very effective way to get that going. The other extra thing just to add in around the complexity is that we are part of a movement as Advance, but in many ways we're a movement within a movement because we're meeting each other, trying to hear what's happening in congregations, support each other, and then you dial into the Advance scrum and you're hearing from other churches. And so that's also another level of complexity that you're trying to manage of saying, I'm telling my congregation about its unique story, about the common ground for the city story, and about the Advance story. And those levels can get quite complex, and again, you vote with your time. So where does your time vote go? We haven't necessarily got that one figured out because it is so vital to be part of the broader church, so vital to support your brothers in the congregations, and you are the A team at the congregational level. So that is another added complexity of any multi-site if they're going to be part of a bigger movement, Joe.
And I think it's worth just saying, multi-congregational, multi-site church is really difficult. It's not some sort of magical silver bullet that really just solves everything. I think we really struggle with that. We really struggle with not having enough time for everybody in the room always to share their opinion. And so there has to be an honoring and a deferring and even a discerning of gifting. Certain people speak better into other things. And so to acknowledge the complexity, if you're thinking of coming in to multi-congregational church and you've been quite enamored with it, to say you're also signing up for large degrees of complexity. One of the things that has really helped me in that whole journey has just been the reality of brothering and real relationships. One of the things, we've just been away a couple of weeks ago, all of the congregational leaders were away, having meals in beautiful places together, hanging out in a pool and wrestling each other and telling some stories and catching up. And I think I'm really grateful we keep prioritizing that because without that, this could just become multiple layers of calendars and complexities.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, it's like with anything, you have something that works already. If you're a standalone church and you see what these guys are doing with multi-site and it looks amazing, and the reality is some of it is amazing and some of it's going to be more difficult. So it's going to be easier in some ways than what you're already doing with the partnering and the brothering, and you've got, you know, other guys helping you and keeping you accountable and feeding into your sort of growth. But then, like you said, that just increases the layer of complexity as well. So there are benefits, and, you know, you've got to kind of weigh up and see what is best for your context. So we obviously touched on it last week with the you know, the models of implementation around the city, but you were talking about sort of like budgets and those sorts of things. What are the realities of that? Every congregation is different. They're all different sizes. They, you know, how, you know, what is it, the reality as a congregational leader? How do you manage, like, you know, what you put your money towards?
Yeah, so I think the beautiful thing about church planting together means that those plants are better resourced. So there's a bit of an on-ramp that's a lot of help is provided in year one, and then that slowly tones down over the next 2 years. So that is a lovely financial better together dynamic. And then it's up to the congregation and their eldership team to steward their finances to build for the long term. For some people, you know, us, the rental cost is a big chunk of that, and needs to therefore kind of be a big conversation around, you know, are there other venues in the city? Is there possibility one day of buying? What's the long term way? And out come the spreadsheets, which is very different to another congregation that's over the years paid off their venue and can now staff much more with the budget they've been allocated. So I do think the better together means that these church plants are supported in the early days, which is very exciting. But then once the dust settles, different communities will have different profiles, will have different giving potentials. And then that local eldership team needs to cut its cloth according to what they have faith for and what's coming in. Yeah.
I think flexibility has been really key. We have the most amazing financial minds that have helped shape the models we operate by. And I think I came in year one, I was so impressed, and I kind of assumed, okay, the model is set and that we're just going to apply that every year. And over the years, we've really had to tweak and learn from each year's reality, some of the strengths and weaknesses. Every model has them. And just be ready to actually make some changes along the way. And so that flexibility has definitely been a part of it. I think multi-congregational as well, the kind of swings are more extreme, you know, that suddenly the economy ends up in a difficult place and actually you've got 9 or 10 congregations worth of people going through a swing, and suddenly the model doesn't apply and there's a need to tweak. And so I've just been impressed not just with the clarity of the model, but the willingness not to cast anything in stone and stick to it regardless of where we're at.
Perhaps worth saying that the journey we're on, though, is towards getting more players at the frontier. So the coaches are there, but we don't want to just see a central team developed without the ability to see the game played at the congregation. So there has been a central percentage that has gone towards our Better Together. But as we've grown, that percent, the goal is to reduce it over time so that you're giving more back to the congregations to work with. And that's a painful process because it's like, well, what if the center needs to go to equip the front, and different people draw on different resources, and so they're going to have a different opinion. And so again, that that dynamic model does mean that you're having some pretty crucial conversations around what actually is best to be funded Better Together and what's best to be funded at the congregational level.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, some strong sports analogies coming out here, Paul. Thank you so much for your coaching tips. I think, guys, it's been an amazing time. We've gotten so much good information from, you know, guys on the front lines, like you said. I think it'd be great just to wrap up with a classic interviewer's question of, you know, if you could go back now, or if you had the opportunity to, what would you do differently? And I think this is specifically something that would be helpful for people looking to go into a multi-site church context. If you're going, hey, you're at the beginning, if we'd done this, it would have made our lives so much easier.
So, Nick, I obviously am part of two stories, the Inner City and the Rondebosch. If I think back to the Rondebosch one, that was one of our first congregations. In many ways, it was an artificial plant because it was two meetings happening already. But I think what we should have clarified early days was just the fact that in the evening congregation, you're going to have a lot of students, you're going to do a lot of work into schools and teenagers. And when you send around the offering basket, very little comes back from those two groups, right? And that means that you want to resource into those next generation, you know, life decision-making decades, but you're not necessarily getting the resources back. And I think we've got to a model now where our evening congregation has a lot of interns and it's well-resourced and that team has bulked up considerably. But if I look back, man, we could have seen so much more ground taken if we had at the start recognized that this would be the big divider between the AM and PM. It's just the financial generosity of those going. And I think if I look at our story, how many of our church planters have come out of Rondebosch PM, have come out of youth ministry, come out of schools ministry. So it's not just a for Bosch PM story. It's actually for the city story, that this is where our church planters come from. And so going back, I wish we had actually said, guys, AM, We're grateful that you are generous, but this needs to flow up to our evening congregation. We need to raise up people and send them on equipping courses and get them ready for the city. So we've arrived there, and I'm sure guys would be happy to share how they did. But if we got there earlier, it would have been a lot better.
Yeah, that's great. And it's that thing of kind of building for the future, because at the time when you're doing that, you're looking at the financials purely, and obviously a church is not a money-making business, but there's practicalities of running a church, and you're looking and you're going, man, we're not getting a lot of money from these people, but if we invest in them, what could it be? And you're looking at it now, like you said, I mean, how many of our guys who've been planted out from Bosch PM, those are those guys that we were pouring that money into discipling and to growing in their leadership. And now the city is being blessed through that. And you don't necessarily see the tangible results up front, but 5-10 years down the line, what an amazing thing to be able to look back and see.
And a lot of those PM couples meeting each other, married, having kids, and then going to the AM. So AM getting the full benefit of having discipled them and bringing them in. And you may be not even multi-site listening into it. Maybe you've got a morning congregation and an evening congregation, and they might have totally different profiles. And the temptation could be to just keep investing in that AM, because that's where the parents are served well, and then the parents keep coming back and the kids are. But actually, that PM one is the one where your future leaders could be sitting, and you could really make a big difference.
Yeah, so I think if I could go back and focus more on one or two things, the big one would be I would want to insist on my own priority of the mission of the church and not just the mechanisms of the church. I think my personality is quite wired towards how do the systems work and do we have the calendars in place and wow, that was good. How do we replicate that? And I feel like we started a little bit over aware of trying to implement the model without just going, but there's a reason for the model, and it's that people are being reached and the gospel is being preached. And I feel like we tend to meander in and out of that reality. There are times where it's so fresh, the mission, and we get inspired and we launch out in new and creative ways and we pull off something and it's amazing. But then the temptation becomes just to slot that into the calendar as a calendar event. And, 4 years later, you're doing that thing because it was amazing, rather than there being a current freshness and a current faith walk for the congregation. And so I would want to, this is very much what I endeavor to do going forward. I just continue to insist that everything we're doing is feeding into this amazing mission we've been called to be a part of.
Great. Thanks, guys. We really appreciate your guys' input and your time. For anyone out there who is listening, if you have any specific questions around how to lead a church or church planting or anything like that you think might be a worthwhile topic or a question that you would like an answer to, please do feel free to get in touch with us on any of our social media platforms on Facebook, Twitter, and or Instagram. Keep listening, and we hope that this is going to be something really valuable for you into the future. We'll see you next week.